With over 1,400 people in attendance, the 24th Annual Christian Prayer Breakfast Fort Worth, Tarrant County was conducted at the Will Rogers Memorial Center in Fort Worth, Texas on April 28, 2011. The featured speaker was Coach Brad McCoy, well-known West Texas high school football coach and father of three sons who are exhibiting great athletic accomplishments and great depth of personal character and grounding, a combination all too rare in our society. Listen now as Brad is introduced and then delivers a very insightful message.
Coach Brad McCoy is a highly successful high school football coach whose professional life and many personal associations have been rooted not just in athletics, but championship performance on the athletic field, sustained high performance. Brad's teams have consistently performed well, as have all three of his sons. Brad is the son of a coach, was a successful athlete himself at the college football level, and his wife, Deborah, was a successful shooting point guard in college basketball. So the question remains, where did Colt get all of that ability? In fact, Brad's dad was Deborah's coach out at Abilene Christian College. Brad and Deborah's oldest son, Colt, is well known for setting all kinds of records as the quarterback of the University of Texas Longhorns. But what really distinguished him even more than that was his depth of character, and is his depth of character. In an era when top-performing athletes are frequently arrogant, self-focused, and, to be kind, poor role models, Colt is at the other end of the spectrum, so much so that a great amount of interest has been created nationwide. The question is asked, where did that come from? How did that happen? So that's the question on the table. And we will have, for the next 30 minutes or so, a ringside seat for a look into the ideas, the principles, and the thinking that has fueled that character development, this element of championship living, I would call it. The great news is that the power that has fueled the McCoy family and so many of Brad's teams over the years is really available to us all. While much of the discussion is about successful parenting, the principles are easily applicable to each of us in our lives and beneficial in all of our relationships and transactions with others. The better news, even than that, is that the ideas are simple, the source is clear, as Brad presents them, and therefore they're not hard to access or implement for any of us. So what is life all about? How do we find significance? Can we grow and get better regardless of where we are, what age we are, regardless of our current circumstances? What is really true? What can we hang our hat on? Can I personally end up on the number one team for eternity, perpetually? It's a question that hangs in the air for all of us. They're all good questions, and the coach is going to provide an answer. And by the way, if you like what you hear from Brad this morning, and I promise you will, then you can get more of this wisdom and this insight and encouragement in his new book, which is scheduled for release next month. We've put a little reference on the program as a reminder so that you can remember to look for it. And it's called Home Field Advantage. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on one of the first copies. So, Coach McCoy, we don't want just a pep talk this morning. We want your game plan. Let's give a warm welcome from Fort Worth and Tarrant County to Coach Brad McCoy.
Thanks, Lamar. If you don't know Lamar Smith, you need to get to know him. A great American. And I'm so excited about our colors this morning and being able to be involved in that and be a part of that. I'm very humbled to be here. It's a blessing and honor to be here because I feel like I'm nothing without the Creator that puts us here. And nothing I say and all the accolades that Lamar just had for me and for my son, they really mean nothing without the Lord and our Savior putting us here and doing the things that He wanted us to do. But yet we are excited to be here. Deborah and I are very blessed to be able to put in opportunities like this to speak to great people. And And what a great intentional group this is today. And I bring apologies from Colt. I talked to him yesterday, and we had hoped that he would be here today, but with the NFL lockout and all the things that are going on, he had to be in New York today. So he sends his apologies, and he's a little skeptical. You know, the tide has turned a little bit, and he asked me yesterday. He said, "Dad, I don't know, what are you doing?" He's never heard me speak. You know, he's heard me speak several times to him, but he's never heard me speak. He's hoping I don't say the same things, I'm sure. but he said, "Dad, you know, I'm in airports all the time, and I'll run into people and I say, 'Aren't you Colt McCoy?'" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Man, I heard your dad speak somewhere. It was awesome. You must have had an awesome childhood. I admire what you do. Your dad told some stories about you. You're just awesome." And he calls me going, "Dad, what are you telling these people? You can't be lying to these people. We are not perfect. I am not perfect. Please don't do that." And boy, is he not. Just for an example, you know, I told my kids when they graduated, I said, "Well, you get your education, you graduate, I'll buy you a car." Fair? So I have. He graduated. I bought him a nice Ford truck. Very good, right? Let me tell you, I calculated this. He made more money this year than I've made in my combined salaries in the last 15 years. I'm still making his truck payment. He said, "Dad, it's the principle of the thing. Deal's a deal." So, you know, I talk about being intentional. It's way taken to a far limit. So he's not perfect. I want to make sure y'all understand that. And I have had a great time this morning. We got a lot of, obviously, we're in Horned Frog country, and what a great year those guys had this year. Absolutely. Yeah. Of course, I've been, you know, the customary chant is break a leg when you go speak. Well, I've had guys say gig 'em, you know. I've had guys say sick 'em, so we always have some Baylor Bears in here. I've even had a couple of hook 'em, so I want you to be thankful, and I'm glad that we're here. And I will talk about some things with football this morning because it's been a huge part of my life, and I may reference the Longhorns a little bit. I know we're not all Longhorn fans in here this morning. There may be a lot, but please don't take that in any offense this morning. We're not playing today. I tell you, it's really a privilege to be here, and I want to talk about three things today, and remind us of some things that I think affect our lives. One is being intentional. We've talked about that. Two is having a hope, and what that hope is. And three is being prepared to deal with that. Be intentional, have a hope, and be prepared. Things that in our aspects in our lives is what we do as believers make us tick. Speaking of intentional, I can't help but look out over the audience and see that it's a pretty testosterone-dominated audience this morning. We're excited as men to be here waking up, but I want to say thank you. I was really unprepared for how many wonderful ladies are here this morning. I want to thank you for being here. Sometimes in my keynotes, it's all men. And so I appreciate the ladies getting up and being here this morning. And men, speaking of intentional, I want to remind you to be intentional. A week away, we have a day coming. You know what it's called? Mother's Day. All right, now put it on your calendars. Do something. Be intentional. Don't let an accident happen that day because it'll outlive you, I promise you. Be intentional about that day and what we do. You know, women they're wonderful, and sometimes as men we talk about being intentional, and it's kind of a feminine trait, you know, but because we are. Women outdo us in being intentional. They do. It's built in, and women have this other word. You know what that's called? What's that word that women have? Intuition. Yeah, I didn't believe that a long time until I got married. Now I believe it. Women's intuition. You know, it reminds me of a story. A friend of mine in college, and I have a lot of friends and family here this morning, and this story is not about any of my friends here, so don't try to figure this out. And I certainly in this crowd would not want to ever tell anything that would be off color, so I'm really not trying to tell a joke that's off color, but I want to make an illustration. My friend was telling this story when he first got to college. He didn't want to live in a dorm, so he wanted to live somewhere. He was looking for a house, and he found a place to live, and this young lady had a house, and it was a two-bedroom home, and she rented him a room, and you know, he thought, wow, that's great. She said, I'll do the cooking, and you can help me clean, and you'll pay the rent, and everything will be fine. He thought, how can it be any better than that? Somebody's going to cook for me, and I just pay the rent. So he moves into this situation, but he doesn't tell his mom for a while, obviously, because he knows what she would think. So after a while, he tells his mom what he's done, and she's very disappointed and upset with him. And she says, you just can't do that. That's not how things work, and that's not the way we want to create and live and look at ourselves. And he said, Mom, I promise there's nothing going on. Totally platonic. There's nothing going on. Come see us sometime, you'll know. So sure enough, they invited Mom to supper. And Mom comes over and spends the evening, goes to supper. And the whole supper, she's still talking. She's still thinking in her mind, something's going on here. This can't be right. And Robert told her, said, no, Mom, I promise. There's nothing going on. It's totally platonic. You've got to understand, it's just an arrangement. And so they went through the night. Mom was still, she still didn't believe it, but she went home. 2 days later, the girl comes to Robert and says, Robert, I don't know how to say this, but ever since your mom left, all the forks are gone in the kitchen. He said, what do you mean all the forks are gone? She goes, we don't have a fork in the house. I can't even fix a meal. The forks are gone. He said, well, are you thinking my mom took the forks? She said, well, I don't know, but they're not here. So, you know, he kind of regretfully calls his mom, says, Mom, I don't know how to say this, but and I'm not saying that you took the forks, and I'm not saying that you didn't take the forks. But the fact is, the forks have been gone ever since you left the other night. She said, Robert, I'm not saying that you're sleeping with Jennifer. I'm not saying you're not sleeping with Jennifer. But the fact is, if you were sleeping in your own bed, you'd have found those forks by now. Be intentional. Understand the wisdom that we have. You know, I've been fortunate to be a coach in Texas and teacher for 27 years. Now I'm the athletic director of a group called the Flippin' Group, and it's an incredible group. We deal with growing leadership and performance enhancement across the country. We work with educators. We're the largest teacher training organization in the country. And we work in corporations all over the world, some Fortune 500s. We do a lot in sports. I work in the sports department now. I'm the athletic director, and we do personnel development for a lot of professional clubs across the country. And one of the things I've gotten to do through this is be able to go and speak, and I've been able to go to team-building organizations and corporations and do a lot of speaking. But the greatest thing is I've been able to be in front of faith-based, faith-loving believers. And I love speaking to this because it enables you to just throw it out there like it is. Because the deal is, you get it. As believers, we understand there is something there that we have. And what I want to present to you today is holding on to this hope. Because what you understand is, we have a hope. You have a hope. And we understand that that hope comes from a promise. Now, it's not a hope like a lot of people in this world outside these doors live. You know, you see the lottery get high and people line up around a convenience store waiting to buy one in a 10 million opportunity to win a lottery. That's not the hope I'm talking about. That's a chance. That's a chance to win something. In the scripture reading a while ago that we read, it talks about in Romans that we have a hope that will not disappoint us. What is it that keeps us from holding on to that hope? What is it? What keeps us from being the best that we can be through that hope? The world is desperately searching for a hope, and we have to help them find it. And I just want to reiterate that promise in Romans 5. Rejoice in your sufferings. Boy, it's a tough thing. How do we rejoice in our sufferings? Lord, are you sure that's what you want? You sure that's what you meant to say there? Because I don't like to suffer. It's pretty tough. But he says, rejoice in our sufferings, for suffering produces endurance. And endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope will not disappoint us. Man, isn't that what we're looking for? We don't want to be disappointed. We want that hope. And I've asked the question, why do we have to suffer first? And I don't understand that, but I know it's biblical. You know, forever we coached, and you know, you had to get in shape. And one of the worst things athletes hate to do, they want to play the game. Friday nights come, we want to be there, lights come on, play, but we got to get in shape to do that, you know? And it's a little painful. Monday and Tuesdays were our endurance days. We had to create that because we wanted that hope on Friday night when we got to a ball game. We had to do everything else first. And that analogy holds true for all of us. And whatever we do, we want that hope. But you know what? We live in this world of instant gratification. We want it right now. I don't want to suffer. I really don't want to have all that endurance. I don't need to go that long. I just want the hope now. I want the prize now. What can you give me now? Our culture just drives me crazy. We live in a culture that says everybody gets a trophy. You know, you got kids, you play little sports everywhere. If you show up, if you enter the league, you what? You don't have to win. If you show up, you're going to get a trophy. It's not right. It's not how it works. And when those kids get older, what happens? The expectations, the instant gratification, what they want right now is affected by the culture that we put them in to begin with. You don't always get a trophy. Last year, I brought a team in 3A at Graham over here to the Metroplex to play a state championship football game the weekend before Christmas. We played Carthage from East Texas. I can't even think I'm telling you this because it still hurts when I talk about it. We went for two with 30 seconds left in the game and got beat, 13-12. My team's just distraught. And they had that announcer come up, and they had a guy walk out on the field, and he held up that big trophy, and he gave it to that coach from Carthage. He did not ask me to come get one, too. And all my kids were going, "Coach, where's our trophy?" It's all right, boys, you don't get a trophy. But we're raising a generation and a culture that's the way it is. It's permissive. We want it, and we want it now. We don't want to pay the price for getting it later. And that's a hope that we have to hope for. And that holding on to that hope is really the thing that we talk about. And it's hard. I'm not asking you to do anything easy. You know, the Lord didn't ask us to do anything easy. He said it was going to be tough. He said that road was going to be narrow and hard to find. Do we believe that? But also, he said, "But I tell you what, I'm going to give you this hope, and I'm going to promise. And you know what? It won't disappoint you if you'll hold on." How do we hold on? My youngest son, Case, graduated, was on that state championship playoff team, and he went to Texas. He's the backup quarterback, you know, competing hard for the starting job this spring. But when Case was 5 or 6 years old, he wasn't in school yet. He was at home, and for some reason I took him to school with me on that day. And he was just tagging along, the little kid, and it was lunchtime. We were eating lunch in the cafeteria with all the coaches and teachers, and he was sitting next to me, and I was in a hurry. I mean, I was wanting to get something done. I needed to get the day going. And so I was through eating, and he was just slow. You know how kids are? I mean, he's my slow one when it comes to eating and getting things done. So anyway, I got up. I put my tray up. I said, "Come on, Case, let's go." And I'm not through yet. "No, I don't care. Let's go. You got to go. Dad, I can't. I said, "Come on, son. Suck it up. Let's go." You know the good coach term? You've heard that? And I walked out the door and headed my way, and one of my assistants was sitting by Case, and he said, Case was leaned over that plate, and he was just eating his last couple of bites, and he said, "I'm tired of sucking it up." But that's what we have to do. We're in this culture that says it's going to be easy, that you're going to get it now, and that's not the truth. We're not going to get a trophy. We have to suck it up. And I think God is telling us, look, I've given you this. I've given you this plan. I've promised you this hope. What is it? Why are you not getting it? Hold on to it. Suck it up and let's go. So as we look at that, I want to talk about just for a second some of the things that take that hope away from us. If you didn't know this, fear is the thing that determines our success and our failures. Fear is the thing that enables us to act out. Fear is the thing in this world that drives inappropriate behavior in everything that we do. And right now there are 5 universal fears, not just in this building, not just in Fort Worth, Texas, but in the world. There are 5 universal fears that cause people to derail. And I just want to make sure you understand what they are, and we all go through them. One is death. The fear of death. We all have that. We don't know when. We don't understand it really. We look at it. We know where there's a home after death where we're going, but we have this constant fear of when that's going to happen. Fear drives this need for security. I want to be secure in where I am and where I'm going and secure in my family. But that's a fear that we deal with. Second fear is the fear of being an outsider. None of us want to be alone. None of us want to be on the outside of something. So the fear of being outside, not having something, it's a fear that drives the need for community, like you have here, a community of believers. We don't want to be outsiders. We want to have a group. We have a church group. We have a family group. We have all these support groups and men's groups and ladies' groups. They drive this need for community because we don't want to be an outsider. You know, you look in our metropolitan areas, you look at gangs. That's why. They don't want to be out alone. They don't want to be an outsider. They want to belong to a community. It's a fear. Third fear is the fear of the future. I want to know the future. I want to know what's happening. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm scared for the next day. I don't know how to get up the next morning. You know, people in America spend millions of dollars, seances and palm reading, all the things that go on, trying to figure out if people can tell them what's going to happen in the future. You know, it's simple. All you guys got to tell them is, you know, we've read the end of the book. We win. We know the future. We know. But there's a fear of that. Fourth fear is the fear of chaos. We're afraid of chaos, unorganization. You see it on TV every time you turn on, riots, things going on in other parts of the world, even in our world, protests, and it's a clutter. It's unorganized, and we fear that chaos. And the fear of chaos drives the need for authority. We want someone in charge. We want a leader. We want some to tell us this is the direction. We have to be leaders. The time for leaders in the Christian world to stand up is now. We have to stop the chaos because it causes fears. And the last one, and probably the most important one to everyone sitting here today, the last universal fear is the fear of insignificance. Boy, we want to be somebody. We don't want to go through life and never have anything to hold on to, never have anybody to know us for anything. This insignificance, especially the men in the audience. You know, we want our families to depend on us. We want those things. We need that. The fear of insignificance drives the need for respect. We want to be respected. So we have these fears, and we understand that they cause inappropriate behavior, but I want to tell you today that it's the lack of faith in these fears that allow these fears to rob us of the hope that Romans 5 is talking about. Romans 5 talks about hope that we have, and it will not disappoint us. Fear is the only thing that can take that away. I want to encourage you today to find those fears and to fight those fears. Galatians 5 was read a while ago, and it's a great chapter. And it says, who are you? You were running such a good race. You were running a great race. Who cut in on you to keep you from seeing the prize? Who cut in on you to keep you from holding on to that hope? He's talking to us. We're running a great race, he says. Who's cutting in? You know what he's talking about on a race. You know, you got the track, you got people, you've seen it in the Olympics, somebody cuts in and we fall off, we miss the race. He's asking that in a way that we can understand. What is it that's cutting in on us and keeping us from that prize? And a lot of times it's these fears. And we've got to understand and hope and know and not let that happen. The fears cannot cut in on us. You know, it goes on to talk about in the end of that verse that the kind of influence does not come from the one that calls you. Whoever's cutting in on you is not the one that calls you. You may think it's better. You may think it's someone important. It's not. It's not the one that calls you. I said last night to a group of guys, you know, we sit in a group like this and go, what can I do? What can I do to further make the cause? What can I further advance the kingdom? And you say, I can't do it. It's not me. I don't have that ability. I can't speak. You know, it's not it. God doesn't call the qualified. God qualifies the called. He doesn't need you to be something special. He's going to make you something special. All we have to do is submit to that, understand it, and really believe that that hope is there for us to grab onto. I just want to encourage you today to cut those fears, to really understand and cut the fears out of our life because they really take us back. I want to take you back to that first thing we talked about a while ago, being intentional. It's really important. And it's a passion of me to be an intentional dad. It was a passion of me to be an intentional coach. Those things are really important. Accidents happen sometimes, and sometimes they happen and something good happens. But most of the time when accidents happen, it's really not the best thing. So be intentional about that. Have an intentional thing that you say to people, that you say to your children. You know, I want to encourage the men here too. Do you tell your male children you love them? Do you audibly use the words, I love you? You know, I come from a generation, my dad is 78 years old and I love him to death and he loves me, but I come from that generation that, you know, that wasn't said a lot. It was a hard word to say. And I've just made myself through my children. So I mean, I'm going to tell them I love them every day. And I tell a lot of people that. But kids don't get it because they don't see it. I remember I took a head job several years ago, and I was the first day on the job, and I met with all my teams, and we talked about what we were going, the goals, where we wanted to go in life, where we wanted to go in football. And at the end, I gathered them up and said, let's break it out. You guys have a great weekend. I love you. And I hear this little voice from the back of the crowd going, dude, coach is gay. They don't get it. They just don't get it. And I want to encourage you to be intentional about telling your children. I want you to be intentional about if you have a chance to talk to your dad or your granddad before you hang up, tell them you love them. Out of the box, hard, you bet it is. But it's an intentional statement, and it needs to be said. Encourage that. And as we talk about intentional, we want to work into an area about being prepared. You know, I've been able to speak and all over the country, Deborah and I have had this motto in our family, and if you've heard this part, I'm sorry. I was asked to kind of reiterate this part today because it's powerful to us, and if it's powerful to us and if it can help you be a more intentional parent, be a more intentional business leader, be a more intentional coach, whatever, I'd love to present that to you. But one of the things that we decided when we were young parents is that we wanted to have a reason to raise kids. God gave us three boys, and we wanted to raise them the best we could. We didn't want them to be a failure. So we saw and came up with this motto. And it's very simple. It states this: prepare your child for the path, not the path for your child. Prepare the child for the path, not the path for the child. And it's just a simple statement, but it meant so much to us. And it meant so much to me as a coach because I started using that in my coaching. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. It was an intentional statement, but in the preparation idea, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen when we walk out this door. And you can take the child out of it and you can say, prepare my family for the path. Prepare my church for the path. Prepare my wife for the path. Prepare my employees for the path. It's a whole different thought process of what we look at. A lot of people walk through life and they're not worried about preparing themselves for something. They're worried about what they're going to do with the path. I coached in Texas for 27 years. I coached literally thousands of kids, and I would deal with their parents, and I could see it when it was happening. Their parents would come into my office, and they had this imaginary shovel and a broom, and they would come in, and they'd plop down in my office, and they were wanting to prepare the path. They were wanting to sweep the road off, get the big rocks out, fill in the holes, so when Johnny came along, he's got a really smooth path, and it's easy. Inevitably, when Johnny got to that part in the road where mom and dad weren't there, and something bad happened, he fell in one of those holes and cratered. Because he had never been allowed to success or failure by himself. Well-intentioned, good-meaning parents cripple their children. And we do that with people. If we don't allow people to grow, and it hurts. It's a hurting process. Romans 5 told us, sometimes there's going to be suffering. Don't like it? But you know what? That's the way it's going to be sometime. And we want to help our kids, but sometimes we just don't challenge our kids. Sometimes it's not enough that we do what we do. And I watch these parents do that, and it's an unbelievable thing. So you probably heard this story. I'll tell it again on Colt. When Colt was 6 years old, I was the head coach in San Saba, Texas, a little 2A school down in central Texas. And in those little towns, the rodeo came to town. And y'all understand, I told this one time outside of New York, and when I said rodeo, they went, huh? You guys know what a rodeo is, so I'm cool with that, right? So this rodeo came to town, and Colt came to me at 6 years old and said, hey, Dad, they're having little kids like a steer riding contest. I want to ride a steer in a rodeo. And I said, no, you don't. He said, yeah, I do. No, you don't. We argued for a little while, and finally he convinced me, and I said, okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to let you do this. I'm going to let you ride, and you're not going to want to, but I'm going to let you. But if you go down there and sign your name, you're going to ride that steer. Yes, sir, Daddy. They got a big old belt buckle, and I want it. So we go to the rodeo on Friday night, and then we're sitting in the stands, and, you know, 15 or 20 little knotheads go down the stadium, the floor, and they're riding these little calves, and I don't even hardly know what's going on. We're laughing. Well, lo and behold, they announce at the end the top three come back on Saturday night, and Colt was one of them. I'm going, great, we get to go back on Saturday night. So we go back on Saturday night, and sure enough, the crowd was bigger, the steers were bigger, And about 10 minutes before time for Colt to go down there and ride this steer, he looks over at Deborah, looks at Mom, and says, "Mama, I don't want to ride that steer tonight." And to my horror, my wife says, "Well, it's okay, baby. You don't have to if you don't want to." And I was going, "Okay, do I bite my lip? What do I do?" "No, can't do it. He signed it." I looked at Deborah and I said, "Honey, I'm sorry, but he's riding tonight." She goes, "Brad, he might get hurt. It's dangerous." I said, "You're right. He might. Might get hurt. But he's riding." So I grab Colt by the arm and we start walking down the stairs and he's going, "Daddy, please, please don't make me ride." Of course, I'm coaching in this little town and there's 50 mothers right there and they're just going, "That Coach McCoy, he's the sorriest guy I've ever seen. All he cares about is winning. He'll sacrifice his own kid just to win. He's nuts." I mean, I'm getting darts thrown at me. I go all the way down into this arena. I even get in the chute with Colt. He's still squalling, "Please, please." I help tie him on this calf. And these two big old cowboys are looking at me going, "Coach McCoy, you've lost your mind." Colt's going, "Daddy, please, no." And I said, "Open that gate." Now he's gone. He rides that steer, and he gets off on the side, and he gets kicked off. He gets a bloodied lip, and there's blood all down his shirt. But he wins that belt buckle. Now, that's not the point, okay? The fact that I slept on the couch for a week wasn't the point either. But the point was this. He said he was going to do something at the age of 6. It would be months later that Colt would come back to me and just in a conversation in the pickup one night and say, "You know, Dad, thanks. I was so mad at you, but thanks for making me do that." "Why?" I said, "Why were you mad? Why? What was the deal?" He said, "I was scared." I said, "Well, what were you scared of?" He said, "I don't know. I don't know, but I was scared." I said, "Well, I knew you were scared, but you know what? You got to do things. When you tell people you're going to do things, and when people count on you for things, you have to do it. No matter if you're scared, no matter if there's a chance you might get hurt." You see, it was a teachable moment. It wasn't anything important. It wasn't catastrophic in our life. A rodeo, a steer riding thing. It was nothing huge in the scale of life, but it was a teachable moment in mine and my son's life. Did it help him do things like he's done today? I don't know. I don't know if it did or not. But what I want to present to you today is while we're preparing, we're talking about being prepared, walk through those doors. Walk through those open doors. God is going to put teachable moments in our life with our families, with our acquaintances, with our friends, with our corporations, with our business opportunities. He's going to put those teachable moments in your life, I promise. Find them. Use them. Influence people. Don't be afraid to walk through that door. I'm telling you, he promises a hope. He promises that. You know, I just want to end with a story that we've told before to several groups, and it's special to me. I hope it can be special to you, and I know we're not all Longhorn fans, but when we talk about being prepared, I was, and you know what? I would have given anything I own in this world to have had an opportunity in last year's national championship game to prepare that path, to make that different. But you know, we've already talked about we don't have that ability. We can't do it. But I was sitting in a stands in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl along with 110 other thousand people, except I was just a little bit different. The only thing my son had ever wanted in life, in his football life, was to lead a team to the national championship. That's it. He didn't really care about all the other awards, whether he won them or lost them. That was it. That's all he really wanted. And so I find myself sitting in the national championship, and I sat down. I remember saying this prayer: "God, thank you. I couldn't have done this any better myself. I couldn't have designed this anything better myself." Deborah says I shouldn't say that. It sounds like I'm being, you know, boastful, and I'm not really being boastful. I was just thankful. And so the game starts, you know, it's a beautiful day. It's, everything's perfect at the Rose Bowl. Great, 70 degrees, the paratroopers flying out, fireworks going off, the flag flying. I thought, this is heaven. This is the greatest thing on earth. Game starts, and we know how that goes. And about five plays into the offense, we're in a position to score. And Colt runs the play and gets hurt. And I knew when he got up that something was wrong. And all that stirred up emotion and feeling of pride and thankfulness, it went to nauseation. I and I was just, how can this be? And I see him walking off, and I see him hold his arm. I see him tap his helmet. He had never done that. And I start watching, and then I see my wife. And she goes to her knees, and the first words I hear out of Deborah's mouth are, please, Jesus. Please. No, this can't happen. And I don't want to say right here, if you've lost a child, if you've lost a parent, if you have had death in your family, I sincerely apologize. This was a silly football game. But you know, it was a really important time in the life of my young family. So Colt comes out, and we watch him, and they work on him. He's not getting better, and they take him under the Rose Bowl. And I sat as a dad as long as I could. And finally, I can't sit any longer. So I go down, and I fight my way onto the field and the security, and I get underneath, and I'm walking into the dressing room, and the doctors are all standing on the outside, and they're kind of looking at me like, you know, you're going in there? I said, yeah, he's not dead. I'm going in. And I walk in this room, and Colt is by himself in this trainer. He's got ice all over one side of his body, and when I walk in, he raises up like he's got his eyes. And have you ever run over an animal, like at night? And you don't kill that animal, but you wonder what it, and so you circle around and you go back and see what's in the road. And he's not dead, but if he could get to you, he would kill you. That was my son. He was wounded, and he didn't know why. He didn't understand. But when he saw it was dad, he just melted. And he looked at me and he said these words I'll never forget. He said, Dad, I had them. I knew everything they were doing before they did it. Why? I said, I don't know why. I don't know why. He said, well, it doesn't matter why because I'll be back. I'm coming back. Well, the halftime in, Coach Brown comes in. We go through the whole thing, and the doctors have assured him that he's probably not playing. The kids go back out, and we're listening to this thunder of 100,000 people above us. Coach says, come on, Dad, let's warm up. So he takes all this ice off, and we go into this room, and he grabs a football, and we get about 10, 12 yards apart, and we're going to try to play catch. And he throws that first ball, and it lands at my feet, and I'm dying. He does nothing. I mean, things that he could do in the seventh grade, he couldn't do that day. And we're listening to this crowd above him that was supposed to be at his time. And in my mind, I'm flashing back to all these things, playing catch with your five-year-old kid in the front yard. The dreams that you create, and I'm just telling the Lord, give me my arm. I don't even need it. And you visualize all these things, you know, that your kid, and your kid said it too. Daddy, Daddy, I'm going to win the Heisman someday. If I had any profitability, I would have said, no, you're going to get second twice, but you're never going to win it. But I didn't have that ability, so I couldn't tell him. But, you know, the story goes on, and he goes out, and he supports his team, and it was one of those fogs for me, and I couldn't create why. I couldn't get in my mind wrapped around, this kid has given so much, and he's been such a good kid. What is it? What is it, God? What do you have? What is prepared? And I know you've probably seen this, but I want to, I think we have this queued up. I want you to look at how God used a 20-year-old kid. Do we have that?
Texas quarterback Colt McCoy. Colt, what was it like for you to watch this game, your last game in a Longhorn uniform from the sideline?
I love this game. I have a passion for this game. I've done everything I can to contribute to my team. And we made it this far, and it's unfortunate I didn't get to play. I'd have given everything I had to be out there with my team. But congratulations to Alabama. I love the way our team fought. Garrett Gilbert stepped in and played as good as he could play. You know, he did a tremendous job. And I always give God the glory. I never question why things happen the way they do. God is in control of my life. And I know that nothing else, I'm standing on the rock.
You know, I've coached my whole life. I coached him. I've coached thousands of kids, and all the touchdowns, all the awards. I've never been more proud of a person in a hard time. And when I finally saw that, I got my answer. I got the answer. God, I didn't know why. And God was saying, hey, you know, I know what y'all all prepared down there. I know that you wanted this path to be a certain direction, but that's not the path that I had in mind. And I could do nothing to prepare that path. All I could have done was hope that Deborah and I had prepared the child. Prepared him for a time in life that God could use him. Does he ever get used again? I hope so. But that was a time. I had cards, letters, and messages from preachers and pastors and rabbis for a month talking about how they were preaching that. And I got back to Graham High School 4 or 5 days later, and I was back in my routine, and I went to off-season with my kids. And after that day was over, this little freshman boy came up to me and said, "Coach, I'm sorry. I'm sorry Colt got hurt. Texas would have won the game. It's a killer. I'm sorry you had to go through that, but I got a question." And I said, "Yeah, well," he said, "what's the rock? What is the rock?" And I've thought about that. And I want you to think about that. What is the rock? And why do people not know it? The rock is our hope. The rock is telling us you have the hope. Be intentional. Be prepared. And I will stand by you. So what is the rock? My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly lean on Jesus' name. On Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. Thank you. I just want to encourage you today, find that rock. Find that rock and stand on it and let everyone know where you're standing and find as many people to stand on it as you can with you. God bless you. Thank you for letting me come to be with you today.